This is The Book and the Spade, a report on the latest discoveries and developments in biblical archaeology. Here's your host, Gordon Govier.
We have typically been interviewing archaeologists during the summer in recent years to get an update on recently concluded archaeological excavations in Israel, and we're going to be talking with Steve Ortiz about the excavations at Tel Berna on our program today. But first, I have a couple of other questions. Steve, you are the co-director of the Tel Berna excavation, which just wrapped up its 14th season. You're also director of the Lanier Center for Archaeology and professor of archaeology and biblical studies at Lipscomb University. I want to start by referring to a quote that I talked about a couple of weeks ago on this program, and I've also been using on my website. In an interview a number of years ago, you said, "The biblical authors assume their audience knows the context of the revelation. Unfortunately, Westerners are far removed from the context of the revelation. Archaeology and biblical backgrounds help to place God's word in its proper context of revelation." Is that an accurate quote? Did you say that?
Yes. You know, when I teach students, when I teach in church, that's basically one of the themes I'm always talking about, that the Bible's contemporary. It's for our time. It impacts us. But we forget how it was formed, that this was a particular people in a particular time, in a particular place, and God used them based on their background, but also where they lived. And so the political situation, the cultural situation, the geographical situation. And we have to study that if we want to study God's word more fully.
I am really interested in context, maybe more so than most people. And that's really important when you're studying the Bible, because if you understand the context, you can understand the Bible better.
Yes, not just in ancient times, but in modern times. We have regional differences, north and south, east coast, west coast, just nuances in how we speak.
It's interesting you talk about the contemporary world, because in our political world today, there's so much talk about tribalism. Really, that's the context of the ancient world. It wasn't countries. It was tribes and family groups that really formed society.
That's true. And I just spoke at a conference in Jerusalem a month ago, archaeological conference and biblical conference. I was talking about the westward expansion, our work at Berna and my work at Gezer. You know, when we talk about political borders, even our Bible maps, we draw these nice lines between Israel and Judah and the Philistines. When you actually read the Bible, David actually organized groups of tribes into a coalition. And so literally the border can change if one group of people, Ephraim, said, "We're going to follow you." The next day, all of Ephraim's territory was under the auspices of the United Monarchy. And that's how it grew. The modern political situation, we have these borders. We can tell the Texas border from the Mexico border. There's a line, but in the ancient world, it wasn't. It was groups of people coming under allegiance to one leader, and all their territory, all their people, all their tribal, territory, all of a sudden just became part of it. And then when they broke up, it just separated, just like the divided monarchy.
You've been working in that border area between Israel and the Philistines, and we're going to be talking about that in just a few minutes. I have one more question I want to ask you, and that's kind of the breaking news story of the summer because of a news release from the Israel Antiquities Authority, and we're highlighting Israel Antiquity Authority breaking news videos on our website. We've been doing that for a number of months, and this is the moat that was first reported last year, one of the top discoveries of 2023. That was number one on our list. And there's just been another news release about this moat. Have you had a chance to go to Jerusalem and look at the moat? Or what are your feelings about this defensive structure that reorients our whole understanding of Jerusalem in the Iron Age and maybe even the Bronze Age?
It's part of this parking lot, this one big area that they've been excavating for 10 years. It's just opening up a lot of what we didn't know about Jerusalem. And for those who've been in Jerusalem, you have the city of David, that's the Jebusite city. We have the temple and then the Western Hill. Well, now within the north part of the city of David, we're getting down to what's beneath it. And now they're finally down to the Jerusalem of the Iron Age or the biblical period of the Old Testament. And so they're just finding new topography. They're finding new structures. And yeah, is this a moat? Is it a quarry? It's a unique man-made geographical altercation there. Archaeologists are like, okay, where was David's palace? Where was David's city? Where was Solomon? And in the Bible, you hear, you know, Solomon built a new palace. And I guess scholars, like with the past 2 months, are now just re-evaluating based on this this moat or this feature there.
It's reported to be 100 feet wide, 30 feet deep, and about 77 yards long. It separates the oldest part of Jerusalem, the city of David area, from the Temple Mount, what we typically call the Temple Mount, and maybe a palace area.
And the Ophel, the biblical Ophel, yeah.
And it gives Jerusalem an Acropolis. I don't usually think of Jerusalem in terms of having an Acropolis, but that seems to be what we've got.
Yes, a meter history. So Philat Mazar found where David's palace was.
Supposedly,
yeah. There's probably another palace, and this is the one that Solomon built. He built the house of God and then his own house.
So maybe on the other side of the moat.
Yes. Yeah. This could be that other, you know. So it's always amazing that we think we understand archaeology in the Bible, and then more excavations come up. And but it's right there in the biblical text. We just got to reevaluate it.
And that's why we can do a weekly radio program, because there's always something new.
Yes. Well, I'm glad we help you out.
For those who've just joined us, we're talking with Steve Ortiz, a co-director of the Tel Berna excavation and a professor at Lipscomb University. And the Tel Berna excavation's last season was this summer. After 14 years, things have wrapped up. What is the importance of Tel Berna?
Well, we joined the project halfway through. We were digging at Gezer. Gezer was a big Judean city during the Iron Age. We read about it. Solomon fortified it. I was interested more in the heartland of Judah. And Berna is one of these cities that's in the heartland of Judah. Well known in the biblical texts, we had some rebellions in the divided monarchy. Libna was part of those rebellions. But also some Judean kings, when they wanted a wife, they got their queen from Tel Berna, which was probably biblical Libna. So within the Judean landscape, it was an important city. And so we joined it because it tells us more about the heartland of Judah, so to speak.
The heartland of Judah, but also the border area with the Philistines.
Yes. And as you know, Gezer's in the northern Shelah, Berna is in the southern Shelah, Bet-Gurim Valley further down south. And so this was always a staging ground between Philistines and the Israelites, the Judeans.
Well, we do have a news item in the latest issue of Artifacts Magazine about these pithoi jars that have been found at Tel Berna. These are huge storage jars, and apparently they came from the island of Cyprus.
Berna has, let's say, two cities. The Canaanite city that was destroyed, and this new Judean city that was built on top of it. These pithoi, these large storage jars that you talk about, are part of the Canaanite city. This was destroyed in the 13th century, possibly under Merneptah. But what's unique is, okay, even in the Canaanite period, this was an inland city. And you have the Egyptians marching up and down the coast. All the battles we hear about, Thutmose III, Ramses, is going to the coast. Berna is still out of that sphere. But these pithoi, this cultic site, these are from Cyprus or the Aegean. And it's like, what are these Canaanites doing out in the hills or, you know, inland with this Cypriot type of pottery? And what does it mean to them? We know it's some type of cultic installation. They're using it. And so it's just something unique. It's something new. Now, for those familiar with archaeology, just down the road at Lachish, we have the famous Phos temples. And these were Egyptian temples built during the Canaanite period. And so all of a sudden, it's looking like this southern Shelah, the southern foothills area, during the Canaanite period. For those familiar with the biblical text, this is like the second battle with Joshua when they came down and they, you know, You have the Canaanite cities forming under Gezer. You have this whole geopolitical situation going on there during the Canaanite period. And our excavations are part of this geopolitical history that we see in the book of Joshua and Judges.
So you have the Canaanites who were there when the Israelites arrived after the Exodus, according to the biblical story, but you also have the Philistines who arrived, or the Sea Peoples, I guess, a broader coalition, yeah, who arrived at some point during this time also.
Correct. It would have predated the Philistine and Israelite migrations. It'd be nice to connect it with the Aegeans, because the Philistines come from the Aegeans. But this is, let's say, 50 years before the Philistines start coming on the scene. So it already looks like during the Canaanite period, you know, we talk about this internationalism during the late Bronze Age, the 1500 to 1200 BC. This could be part of it. It's just, how did these hillbilly Canaanites build this cult complex? Are there their priests that came by from, you know, during this period? We just don't know. Your guess is as good as ours.
Well, the other, I think, story that came out of Tel Berna in the last year or two is this huge Canaanite cultic complex that seems to be very unusual also in terms of what, its size?
Yes. When we joined the project, that was one of the goals. You know, they already had this, the Pithoi stuff was looking Aegean. It wasn't looking Canaanite. There was really wasn't a building. It was more of a outdoor cult complex where they had these various components there. And so when we joined the project in 2018, we were going to expand south and kind of put this cult context. The question is, where did the priests live? Was there a temple? Where's the late Bronze Age settlement? This is a big cult complex. Where are the people? And so the past 8 years or so, we've been trying to investigate that and find it. And so that's the recent discovery you're talking about. Just south of this complex, we found what we thought was a typical late Bronze Age type of structure, elite building based on the size. And so this season, we were just going to expand that elite building and, you know, find out, okay, this is where the priests lived. And then you had the cult complexes to the north. Well, this building grew and grew and grew. That it's one of the largest structures down in the southern Levant during the 13th century.
One of the largest Canaanite temples discovered in Israel, inland 20 miles from the coast, yet with a mysterious connection to the island of Cyprus, 800 miles away in the Mediterranean Sea. Steve Ortiz, professor of archaeology and biblical studies at Lipscomb University, and co-director of the excavation at Tel Berna, will continue our discussion on the significance of this discovery in our next program. As we mentioned, one of the best places to find breaking news videos from the Israel Antiquities Authority is at our website, radioscribe.com. There you'll find additional resources, including information on our biblical archaeology news magazine, Artifacts. That's at radioscribe.com. I'm Gordon Govier. Thanks for listening. Join us again next time for more Backgrounders on the Bible through Biblical Archaeology on The Book and the Spade.
The Book and the Spade is produced by Scribe Media. For information on biblical archaeology resources or obtaining a copy of this program on CD, go to our website at radioscribe.com.